This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
Welcome to Preserving Our Past on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. Our past can be identified through whakapapa, ancestry, heritage, and history. On this show, we highlight the tangible parts of the past, or those that we can see and touch. I'm Suzanne Rawson, a cultural materials conservator, and I invite you to join me in a journey of uncovering the stories of the special things in our communities. Nau mai, hari mai, and welcome to Preserving Our Past on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. My name is Suzanne, and I'm your host for the show. Thank you so much for listening in. In the last show, on episode 8 on the podcasts, I spoke with Taranaki archaeologist Ivan Bruce, and it was such a fascinating interview that I divided the show into two parts because I wanted you to hear most of the great kororo that Ivan shared with us. We'll begin this show with discussing how objects define history. Join in.
I think one other thing is that when we were doing a lithic survey in Sudan, you would walk the desert, walk the landscape, looking for signs of human occupation or where someone was working the stone. And you would often stop to rest and have a cup of tea or have lunch, and that's when you would discover a site.
Yeah.
Because we say, like, people think we were so different from those thousands of years ago. These would have dated to probably 7,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And human behavior doesn't seem to change. What's been your experience? Like, places that make a nice lookout and a nice place to stop for a cup of tea?
You can see it. Like, New Plymouth's a great example. We've got we have all these lovely hilltops that people love to build houses. We've got these great sea views on the stream, the river's just down there, and the sea's there, and there's a pass out there, right? And there's a really good reason for there's a pass out there. It's exactly the same reason you want to build your house there, because it's an awesome place to live, right? Yeah. Another and a slightly similar idea, but is that the bottle collectors, you've probably heard of bottle collectors. They're anathema to archaeologists because they go around trying to find old wells or old rubbish pits and dig them up. And all they take are the bottles. So they kind of destroy the archaeological site just to collect the bottle, which is a shame. But anyway, the bottle hunters have a way of finding the rubbish pits is that they'll go to where the old house used to be and they go to the back door and then stand at the back door and throw a bottle. And about where you throw the bottle is where you'll start digging, and that's where you'll start finding, because that's what people do. Behavior, same thing, yeah. You know, your behaviors don't change, so you replicate the behaviors of people back then, and then you'll find the outlines of where they used to be. Yeah,
that is fascinating. So, yeah. As much as your study is about material culture or includes material culture, you're really studying people's behaviors.
Totally, that's all archaeology is. It's a study. So, some clever bugger once said that what does an archaeologist study? Well, an archaeological site is anything an archaeologist chooses to study. I mean, I can make an archaeological site out of your backyard and what your kids left lying around if you want to, because I'm studying culture.
Wow.
If I chose to do that.
Wow.
Yeah. Through the material. I'm studying human behavior through material culture. So you can learn a lot about human behavior from material culture if it was deposited 20 minutes ago. We just kind of trying to look at older stuff through older deposits.
The first song we have is one of Ivan's favorite by the band 3Ds. The title is Spooky.
Don't worry.
Welcome back to Preserving Our Past on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. In this segment, we'll hear about a case study from Ivan's early archaeological experience, and we'll also dig into what archaeology can teach us about the past.
So when I was in Northland, one of my colleagues was doing his PhD thesis on the archaeology of Tawhirahi, which is the northern of the Poor Knights Islands. So it's an offshore island, fascinating island. The last people to live on the island lived in the 1830s, and they were a Ngāti Wai, group of Ngāpu from Northland. So they lived in this offshore island, which is a long way offshore off Whangarei. And they were guarding on the island, and they were collecting mutton birds, and they'd take them back to the mainland as a high status food, and that was their source of trade and on the island. Anyway, one day when the male population had gone elsewhere to be involved in the musket wars, another group from Northland, taking advantage of the fact that the blokes weren't there, turned up and wiped out the island, basically. And following that, the place was made tapu, and no one ever went back, or very rarely went back. So Tawhirahi is an incredible archaeological site. It's like New Zealand's Pompeii. There's just, terraces and stone walls and garden systems and artefacts lying around the surface. No one can go there. It's a nature reserve, right? Yeah. So we had to have a special permission to do what we did. Yeah. And this is an interesting study of artifacts, because they're literally lying around the place, and you can see them. And you can, as an archaeologist, we pick up these artifacts and we look at these artifacts and go, wow, look, here's an obsidian flake. And that suggests that, someone's been flaking or someone's been using these stone tools. And I had the most amazing experience was that it's all covered in bush and stuff like that. So we were kind of working around on hands and knees, recording things. And we found a stone. I found a stone flake. A stone flake, an obsidian flake. It's like, wow, cool. Here's an obsidian flake. It was a really big one. And then James was beside me and said, "Oh, look, there's another one." And there was another flake just over there. Oh, that's interesting. And then we found a quarter. Found, literally looked closely. Said, "Hey, there's the cortex, which is the big piece of obsidian the flakes were being napped from." Oh, that's interesting. And then we looked down and said, "Hey, there's the hammerstone."
Gosh.
And so we found the hammerstone. We found the cortex, and we found all the individual flakes. So we could. We sat there and went, wow, someone has literally, and we could piece it back together again. This is,
wow.
Someone has been napping and then dropped tools for some reason. And then we sort of got a bit spooked and went, well, I wonder why they dropped tools. Knowing the history of the island is that the population was wiped out into tribal warfare. And we went, oh, crikey, that's interesting.
Why is what you do important, Ivan? What is it about studying the past that is important for us now? What do we actually learn from these sites?
It's the perennial question, really. There's the old truism: those who don't learn from history are destined to repeat it, and there's certainly an element of that. But it's a thing that perpetually interests people. You can't escape it. I mean, at some point or other, you're going to find yourself interested in your history. If you don't understand what happened in New Zealand 500 to 800 years ago, you've really got no way of understanding what's going on in New Zealand now, in many ways.
Wow.
I'm not explaining that one particularly well.
That's a perfect way of explaining it.
But if you don't, the things like the way people have used the land and way people have... people who come to New Zealand, they've developed into a culture, and then other people have come to New Zealand and developed into cultures, and we can understand some of that through history and through understanding history, particularly since the 1860s, for example. There's been a lot of focus on that, but everything that happened before that period of time, the only way you can understand the development of Māori culture in New Zealand and the impact of, the first contacts with Europeans is through looking at the archaeological record. Because that's where it's, you get the most visceral representation of what's going on. It's where you really do see it. It's where you really do understand it.
We'll end this segment with a song by Hozier titled Foreigner's God. Welcome back to Preserving Our Past on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. And if you've listened to the show from the start, you heard that for this episode, we are listening to an interview with Taranaki archaeologist Ivan Bruce. This is part two and the last episode of the interview. In this last segment, I ask Ivan about how we classify objects as evidence of the past. Listen in with me.
How do you feel about that term being applied to objects? Because it suggests that while the object is physical and concrete and we are using our senses to study it and our scientific tools to analyze it, it still comes down to how a person interprets it or how an archaeologist gathers information from it.
I guess it's a loaded, the term evidence becomes a bit loaded in that you're saying that you're sort of sitting on the fence a little bit as to, this isn't an ads, for example, this is evidence. So you're maybe stepping back from making any decisions about what this object necessarily is, which...
It might suggest there's also only one truth to history.
Right? Yeah,
and
yeah.
Which is not how we now interpret history.
But it's a term that opens the door to, looking at things in a different way. That's fine. I don't have any real objection to that. But I do at some point, though, think that an object has a purpose. And you should be able to work out what that purpose is. They may have more than one purpose, and that's fine. But, there will be a... At some point, there is a truth to things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a case of narrowing that down sometimes.
I'd like to end the show today by tying in some thoughts about preserving archaeological materials. So conservators are very material-oriented. We think about archaeological materials as being in underground or underwater environments. And as you can imagine, that's really hard on objects. They're exposed to moisture, heat, cold, different minerals and ions that are in the soils and leach into the object, or water, and even ultraviolet light if they're exposed on the surface. So when we uncover an object, the object's in a state of shock. It's reached an equilibrium with its burial environment, it's happy, but then we expose it, so there's light and oxygen and people touching it. So it's really important to be aware that archaeological objects and taonga from these environments can be very fragile. And additionally, they may need advanced treatment before they can be studied further by the archaeologist. So in the case of objects that have become saturated or wet, it can be really hard to study the tool marks or decorations, particularly in the case of wood, because what happens is that the wood swells as it absorbs the water. And all those really microscopic details that we use to understand how the item was made or how it was used, they become invisible. So it's not until after the conservation process that we can see some of those details and the natural color of the wood, etc. So conservators play an important part in archaeological investigations. We are trying to retain as much information on the object and make it available for study as best as possible. Thank you so much for listening this week. That's our show for this week. Nga mihi nui, listeners, and thank you so much to our sponsor, HPFS Solutions, for making these stories possible. Please join me next week when we begin a whole new story. To listen to past episodes, visit our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.